Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth. B-F-F-T. From the PAC West Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
This is going to be a great hour of radio, and it's going to be carried by my guests. I'm so excited to have two conversations this hour. John Wilner, San Jose Mercury News, the PAC-12 guru, the guy when it comes to the PAC-12 conference, is going to lead us off. Mario Cristobal texted in hour number one, said he wants to come on at 1:30. I think he wants to have a conversation with you. So I want you to be respectful and show up for that appointment at 1:30 with Mario Cristobal. In fact, just settle in now. Grab a cup of coffee, an iced tea, a sandwich, whatever your thing is, and settle in for the next hour as John Wilner and Mario Cristobal carry this show. John Wilner joining us now, San Jose Mercury News. Let's start with Oregon, Wilner. Oregon wins this game. There were some bad things that happened in the conference over the weekend, but how big of a weekend was it for the Pac-12?
Well, I mean, if Oregon had lost, it would have been a Black Saturday, I think. Although, because everything else was either mediocre or playing bad from a big picture perspective. The Ducks saved it. You know, it's kind of like the first week where UCLA saved the conference with the win over LSU, except Oregon's victory means more because of who it was against and where it was. But boy, I'll tell you what, without those two wins, it would not be a good scene out on the West Coast.
Wilner, Oregon dominating the line of scrimmage, I guess after watching Minnesota in week one do that to Ohio State, it wasn't shocking, but it was different to see a Pac-12 team push around Ohio State, wasn't it?
It was, and if you think back, you know, the point of comparison would be like Oregon-Auburn. When that game was tight, Auburn did the pushing around, right? Yeah. And the Ducks were on their heels in the fourth quarter. We saw Ohio State pushed USC around a few years ago, what was it, the Cotton Bowl. This was, and UCLA did it too to LSU, but it's clearly, you know, a little bit of a turning point here. The Pac-12 is holding its own at the line of scrimmage against LSU, Ohio State, two of the, you know, the dominant programs, the NFL draft pipeline places.
Wilner, you look at Oregon's victory. Do the Ducks stand alone with that win, or does the Ducks beating Ohio State do something for UCLA and everybody else as the season unfolds?
See, I think it lifts all the boats, or all the relevant votes, because here's what happens. Let's say, you know, some combination of events happen, and Oregon wins in North, but, UCLA or Arizona State were to win the conference title. Then that team has beaten the team that beat Ohio State. There's like a ripple effect that raises up everybody. We see that with the SEC all the time. You know, Alabama loses, and it's not, oh, well, Alabama is not that good. It's that whoever beat Alabama must be so good that they could beat Alabama. Well, same thing's going to happen now. UCLA beats Oregon when they play. I don't even remember when that game is. Then all of a sudden, UCLA has beaten the team that beat Ohio State. It elevates everything.
Wilner, you make a good point about UCLA and Chip Kelly. They get a 7:45 kickoff. Chip Kelly, being Chip Kelly, I want to read his quote. I think it was fantastic. He basically pointed out that it was prime time in the Philippines, so let's go put on a show for Manila. How do they assign networks and kickoff times in the Pac-12?
Well, it's a complicated process, and I just published something about this. Fox and ESPN are at the controls, right? And a lot of times their interests conflict conflict with what's best for the Pac-12 or the teams involved, right? I mean, if you're the Pac-12, you don't want one of your two hottest teams playing at 7:45 against Fresno on the Pac-12 networks, because nobody's going to stay up late enough to watch and nobody gets the Pac-12 networks. And next week, I can't wait for what Chip's got to say next week, because they're on the Pac-12 networks at Stanford. But the problem is ESPN Fox, you know, they've got business decisions to make based on ratings. So they're paying $3 billion for the right to dictate when all these games are. And, you know, they didn't want I haven't looked at what the national lineup is this week, but ESPN Fox didn't want UCLA Fresno, so it gets kind of pushed down in the Pac-12 networks. And the problem there, of course, is it's a terrible business model and nobody gets it. So if you're on the Pac-12 networks, you got no chance of being seen, especially if you're playing at night, no chance of being seen east of the Rockies.
John Wilner with us, San Jose Mercury News. You can read him in the Oregonian, on Oregon Live as well, in his syndicated Pac-12 coverage. Oregon wins this game. Do the Ducks need to go undefeated, Wilner, in your mind, to make the playoff?
I don't think so. And this was the single biggest impact on Oregon season from that win is now there's some margin for error, right? They can lose, pick your team, UCLA, Washington. I mean, that would be a pretty big shocker at this point, right? All Oregon's got to do is score 7 points and they're going to beat the Huskies. But, you know, they can lose anywhere and finish 8-1 in conference. They finish with the conference championship. They're sitting there 12-1 with a win at Ohio State. They are in.
Wilner, I keep looking at Ohio State. Does it hurt Oregon if Ohio State isn't Ohio State this year?
It does. I mean, certainly the Pac-12 needs LSU to be good and Ohio State to be good. A lot better chance that Ohio State will be good. I mean, I got to think the Buckeyes are still going to be, you know, at worst case, they're 9-3, 10-2, and that win still carries a ton of weight. It could get off the rails in Columbus, but that seems pretty unlikely. But if you're an Oregon fan, if you're a Pac-12 fan, you want Ohio State and LSU to keep winning.
The conference, you know, had a couple of bad moments, as you mentioned. BYU beats Utah. Stanford knocks off USC. What is going on with Clay Helton? And Bill Plachke, the LA Times columnist, calling for Helton's head today. Would USC move on Helton midseason?
I think they would. I think it's going to have to get worse, and I think that they would have to determine, the administration would have to determine that the players, you know, the experience for the players, as disruptive as a coaching change is in the middle of the season, and SC has gone through its fair share of midseason coaching changes in the last, you know, 6 or 8 years, they'd have to determine that even that disruption is worth it because the experience for the players is so bad under Helton. The problem is they've played this game with him where they keep bringing him back. He's in limbo every season. And so, you know, all the negativity and all the critics, that, you know, they're just surrounding the castle walls. And so one or two more losses and there's going to be this wave of negativity that's going to infiltrate the program and make it impossible for the players to have a decent experience. And then the administration could be left with no choice.
David Shaw at Stanford, meanwhile, they look anemic offensively in week one. They come back and look very good against USC. Is this a case of David Shaw just figuring something out?
I don't know. I mean, the SC game is a rivalry game for Stanford. And, those SC guys, they know, they saw what happened to Stanford the first week, and I'm sure they kind of were assuming they were going to win. Meanwhile, Stanford comes into a rivalry game. They've been embarrassed. They're pissed off. And Shaw's got them ready to play. I don't know. You know, I think Stanford is probably somewhere in the middle of those two performances, not as bad as they looked against Kansas State, not as good as they looked against SC. But clearly, you know, they're going to be reckoned with to some degree or need to be reckoned with to some degree in the North, right? Whether they are good enough to finish second or third, I don't know. But it does not appear that they're going to be a pushover, which kind of is what you started to think after that first week.
John Wilner covers the Pac-12 like nobody else. You had the Pac-12 rewind. I checked it out. It was really interesting. You looked at the non-conference records of the SEC, the Big Ten, and the Pac-12. You point out Pac-12 11-11 now in non-conference games. SEC 23-3 in non-conference games this season. Big Ten 17-3. Pac-12 isn't back yet, is it?
It's not back. But, I mean, it's tough. It's different, right? The last, I don't know how many years, four, six, 8 years, the Pac-12 has been defined by the parity, right? It didn't have a playoff caliber team, but boy, you know, 3 through 9 or 10, it was really good. Anybody could beat anybody, eat your own kind of a deal. That's not good for getting in the playoff, though. Now it seems like, and it's still early, but it seems like it's flipped, and it's got two really good teams in Oregon and UCLA, maybe a third in ASU. But then the middle is kind of soft, right? So it's getting top-heavy, which is good for the playoff, and top-heavy is what the Big 12 has been and what the ACC has been, right? I mean, the Pac-12 just hasn't had a version of Oklahoma or a version of Clemson, and that's hurt it with the playoff. Maybe this year it's like the ACC. It's not very good, but it's got one or two great playoff-caliber teams, and it would be different, and it would certainly help in the postseason. But, you know, we got to see. The parity only gets you so far when only four teams can get in the playoff.
A lot of talk about Clay Helton and USC. Jimmy Lake at Washington made me think about Mark Helfrich, just in the context of, you know, both were assistants who were promoted. Helfrich, as it turned out, a really good number two, probably not a great CEO and head coach. Is that the early narrative on Jimmy Lake, or what is going on at Washington?
Oh, boy. I mean, I don't know. I think it's probably too early to know because last year, you know, how do you evaluate last year, right? I mean, he seemed like he did a pretty good job. They were 3-1, but at the same time, it's almost like this is his first real year, right? And it's not going very well, but it's so early. I think, you know, and this kind of gets a little bit into Oregon, right? Who you hire is so important as your offensive and defensive coordinators. Lake hired an offensive coordinator, and it was met with a fair amount of skepticism in the industry, right? A guy named John Donovan, who had been, you know, basically fired as Penn State's offensive coordinator years ago. Meanwhile, Cristobal, he's got former head coaches at both of his play-calling positions, right? Joe Moorhead, well-regarded, basically turned Penn State around after Donovan left. And then Tim DeRuiter, who was at Fresno State as a head coach and then did a great job for a few years at Cal. Cristobal has hired former head coaches who are really well-respected as his coordinator job. I thought those guys did a great job at Ohio State. I thought they earned their entire pay for the year in that one game. But then you see Lake, who's hiring a guy that doesn't have nearly the resume that those others do. And I think that that's for a young coach especially, you got to be willing to hire more seasoned coordinators, you know, and not, I don't know if it's an ego deal or whatever, but to me, that's what stands out right now about Lake is the staff. And it's kind of the contrast with Oregon staff is dramatic.
Wilner, as you look forward to this weekend coming up, which game are you most interested in seeing? If you can only watch one game.
Probably Arizona State BYU, because we don't know anything about ASU, and they have the potential to be a real factor in the race, and they're also one of only three unbeaten teams left in the conference. And here's BYU, which has beaten Utah and Arizona, is going to try to go 3-0 against the South. So I think, to me, it's really a first chance we're going to get to figure out anything about ASU. They're the one of the top tier teams, they're the one we know nothing about. And BYU's clearly going to be a good test for them. I would probably, you know, look at that one. But at this point, every USC game is going to be worth watching because, you know, it could quickly turn into a train wreck.
I love that Oregon State did to Hawaii about what I think they should have done to Hawaii. Looks like they found their starter at quarterback in Chance Nolan. He was very efficient, 300 yards against a really bad Hawaii defense, but they, you know, they put 45 on him. Oregon State needs to get to a bowl game, Wilner. As the conference is shaping up, you look across this conference, do you see six wins out there for Oregon State if they're sitting at 2-1 after this weekend?
I do. I think, yeah, that was a huge win for them, and you know, kind of assume they're going to win this week. But going 2-1 non-conference is gigantic, right? Because then you only have to go 4-5. Now, I don't remember off the top of my head who they're playing.
I got it right here. I'm going to give you their schedule. They're at USC on the 25th. They're home against Washington the week after. They go to Washington State, home against Utah, at Cal, home against Colorado, home against Stanford, home against Arizona State, and at Oregon.
I think there are four wins there, absolutely. Yeah. You look at the state of Stanford, Cal, Washington State. I mean, the North, second place in the North is there for the taking. The Colorado, I don't think is, overwhelming at all. If they had Arizona on the schedule, I would say, guaranteed six. Right. But I think they could get four. I mean, that's why, winning the other day was so big. You've got to be 2-1, and that's the problem Washington and Cal are going to face here. Even if they win this week, they got to go 5-4.
Yeah, I look at it, too, and I think with that combination, Washington State, Colorado, Washington, Stanford, Cal, and let's not forget, Oregon State beat Oregon last season. Oregon State is good for a win you never see coming every year. And even USC on the 25th, I'm kind of wondering what the state of the Trojans program is going to be if some players check out. I think it's out there for them. Wilner, I appreciate you. I got Mario Cristobal at 1:30. What should I ask Cristobal?
Ask him to break down Stony Brook's edge rushers.
I love it. Stony Brook. You know Stony Brook's mascot, by the way?
No, I do not.
I'm looking it up right now. Wolfie the Sea Wolf. They are the Sea Wolves. Or the Sea Wolves. So Wolfie.
Okay. What are they in the Colonial? I'm not even sure what league they play in football.
By the way, Wolfie is a mythical sea creature. There's no such thing as a sea wolf. But that is a Stony Brook. Yeah. But Stony Brook is one of those academic institutions. The SEC ought to add them. They want to get the cred up. You know what I mean?
There you go. That's right. It would give them a footprint in the New York market.
There you go. So there it is. Stony Brook, are they in the international conference? Is that right?
I don't know. I wonder what that is. There's got to be a place. Maybe, it might be somewhere, some offshore place in the Caribbean, but somebody's got to be given odds on that game.
I'm looking at it right now. They're in the America East Conference. How about that?
Okay. I'm saying Oregon -47.5.
I won't bring that up with Mario Cristobal. Thank you, John Wilner. You're the best, my friend.
All righty. I'll see you.
All right. There he is. Good assessment of the conference. If you want to know what's going on in the Pac-12, when Wilner joins us, you got to tune into those conversations. Love what he had to say. I do see 6-plus wins for Oregon State this year. I do think they're going to beat Idaho coming up this weekend. I will not be surprised if the game is closer than most expect. I'm not making my game prediction till about Thursday, but I felt like Jonathan Smith, he's got experience. He has coached there at Idaho. I don't think he's in this one to embarrass anybody. And I think Oregon State is going to try to stay healthy in front of Pac-12 play. So I would not be surprised if they stay ahead in that Idaho game. Mario Cristobal, too, has got to be looking at this Stony Brook game as an opportunity to get a win, get his young guys some experience. But I'm not expecting that we're going to see Kayvon Thibodeau out on the field for Stony Brook. This is a good opportunity, I think, to give KT another week off. And by the way, I got to say that I love that Oregon won the game without Thibodeau. Nothing against Kayvon Thibodeau. But all summer long, we heard about how he was the number one guy on the draft board. He's the number one pick. He's all this. Name, image, likeness. All the endorsements. Again, I'm not knocking the kid. But I just like the idea that Oregon won without him. For the message that it sends to everybody else on the roster about how important it is to show up and play and practice and not think that Oregon's success is tied to one guy. I loved at the end of the game, he was jumping around like anybody else, waving a towel, being a good teammate. But I also, I kind of smiled when I saw Oregon won. Yeah, they won. They won without him. Because the narrative otherwise would have been what? Oh, they didn't have Thibodeau. Oh, how different the game would be. And I saw people tweeting, literally saying, well, I would predict an Oregon win, but Thibodeau's not playing. Love the fact that they won without him. Leave it here. You got the BFT. Mario Cristobal will be joining us at 1:30, so I'm going to be brief in this segment. I want you to settle in as we'll talk to the Ducks coach. If you have a question you want me to ask Mario Cristobal, I want you to tweet at me, at John Canzano BFT on Twitter. Go ahead and do that. I'm looking around the NFL a little bit. Oh, by the way, Arkansas got fined $100,000 today, guys. They got fined $100,000 for their fans storming the field after they beat Texas. So, by the way, Texas... sure you want to go to the SEC? You know, SEC fined him $100,000 for storming the field. Should that be a fine?
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.